meningitis had badly damaged my neocortex, which is where all of that serotonin from the Raphe nuclei in the brainstem, or DMT, a serotonin agonist, would have had effects on visual and auditory experience. But my cortex was off, and the DMT would have had no place in the brain to act. The DMT hypothesis failed on the basis of the ultra-reality of the audiovisual experience and lack of cortex on which to act. 5. Isolated preservation of cortical regions might have explained some of my experience, but were most unlikely, given the severity of my meningitis and its refractoriness to therapy for a week. Peripheral white blood cell, or WBC, count over 27,000 per cubic millimeter, 31% bands with toxic granulations. CSF, WBC count over 4,300 per cubic millimeter. CSF glucose down to 1 milligram per deciliter. CSF protein, 1,340 milligrams per deciliter. Diffuse meningeal involvement with associated brain abnormalities revealed on my enhanced CT scan and neurological exams showing severe alterations in cortical function and dysfunction of extraocular motility, indicative of brainstem damage. 6. In an effort to explain the ultra-reality of the experience, I examined this hypothesis. Was it possible that networks of inhibitory neurons might have been predominantly affected, allowing for unusually high levels of activity among the excitatory neuronal networks to generate the apparent ultra-reality of my experience? One would expect meningitis to preferentially disturb the superficial cortex, possibly leaving deeper layers partially functional. The computing unit of the neocortex is the 6-layered functional column, each with a lateral diameter of 0.2 to 0.3 millimeters. There is significant interwiring laterally to immediately adjacent columns in response to modulatory control signals that originate largely from subcortical regions, the thalamus, basal ganglia, and brainstem. Each functional column has a component at the surface, layers 1 to 3, so that meningitis effectively disrupts the function of each column just by damaging the surface layers of the cortex. The anatomical distribution of inhibitory and excitatory cells, which have a fairly balanced distribution within the 6 layers, does not support this hypothesis. Diffuse meningitis over the brain's surface effectively disables the entire neocortex due to this columnar architecture. Full thickness destruction is unnecessary for total functional disruption. Given the prolonged course of my poor neurological function, 7 days, and the severity of my infection, it is unlikely that even deeper layers of the cortex were still functioning. 7. The thalamus, basal ganglia, and brainstem are deeper brain structures, subcortical regions, that some colleagues postulated might have contributed to the processing of such hyperreal experiences. In fact, none of those structures could play any such role without having at least some regions of the neocortex still intact. All agreed in the end that such subcortical structures alone could not have handled the intense neural calculations required for such a richly interactive experiential tapestry. 8. A reboot phenomenon. A random dump of bizarre, disjointed memories due to old memories in the damaged neocortex, which might occur on restarting the cortex into consciousness after a prolonged system-wide failure, as in my diffuse meningitis. Especially given the intricacies of my elaborate recollections, this seems most unlikely. 9. Unusual memory generation through an archaic visual pathway through the midbrain, prominently used in birds but only rarely identifiable in humans. It can be demonstrated in humans who are cortically blind due to damaged occipital cortex. It provided no clue as to the ultra-reality I witnessed and failed to explain the auditory-visual interleaving. Acknowledgements. I wish to especially acknowledge my dear family for suffering through the hardest part of this experience while I was in coma. To Holly, my wife of 31 years, and our wonderful sons, Evan the Fourth and Bond, who all played central roles in bringing me back and in helping me comprehend my experience. Additional dear family and friends to thank include my beloved parents, Betty and Evan Alexander Jr., and my sisters, Jean, Betsy, and Phyllis, who all participated in a pact with Holly, Bond, and Evan the Fourth to hold my hand 24/7 while I was in coma, assuring that I always felt the touch of their love. Betsy and Phyllis did yeoman's work in spending nights with me during my full-blown ICU psychosis when I couldn't sleep at all, ever, and in those first very tenuous days and nights after I went to the neuroscience step-down unit. Peggy Daly, Holly's sister, and Sylvia White, Holly's friend of 30 years, were also part of the constant vigil in my room on the ICU. I never could have returned without their individual loving efforts to bring me back to this world. To Dayton and Jack Sly, who did without their mother, Phyllis, while she was with me. Holly, Evan the Fourth, Mom, and Phyllis also helped in editing and critiquing my story. My heaven-sent birth family, and especially my departed sister, also named Betsy, whom I never met in this world. My blessed and capable doctors at Lynchburg General Hospital, LGH, especially doctors Scott Wade, Robert Brennan, Laura Potter, Michael Milam, Charlie Joseph, Sarah and Tim Helwell, and many more. The extraordinary nurses and staff at LGH, Ray Newbill, Lisa Flowers, Dana Andrews, Martha Vesterland, Deanna Tomlin, Valerie Walters, Janice Sanolsky, Molly Manis, Diane Newman, Joanne Robinson, Janet Phillips, Christina Costello, Larry Bowen, Robin Price, Amanda DeCourcy, Brooke Reynolds, and Erica Stalkner. I was comatose and had to get names from my family, so forgive me if you were there and I have omitted your name. Critical to my return were Michael Sullivan and Susan Rentschess. John Audette, Raymond Moody, Bill Guggenheim, and Ken Ring, pioneers in the near-death community, whose influence on me has been immeasurable, not to mention Bill's excellent editorial assistance. Other thought leaders of the Virginia Consciousness Movement, including Drs. Bruce Grayson, Ed Kelly, Emily Williams Kelly, Jim Tucker, Ross Dunseith, and Bob Vandecastle. My God-sent literary agent, Gail Ross, and her wonderful associates, Howard Yoon, and others at the Ross Yoon Agency. Ptolemy Tompkins for his scholarly contributions from unparalleled insight into several millennia of literature on the afterlife, and for his superb editorial and writing skills used to weave my experience into this book, truly doing it the justice it deserved. Priscilla Payton, Vice President and Executive Editor, and Jonathan Karp, Executive Vice President and Publisher at Simon & Schuster, for their extraordinary vision and passion to make this world a far better place. Marvin and Terry Hamlish, wonderful friends whose enthusiasm and passionate interest carried me through at a critical time. Terry Beavers and Margareta McIlvaney for their brilliant bridging of healing and spirituality. Karen Newell for sharing explorations into deep conscious states and teaching how to be the love that you are. And to the other miracle workers at the Monroe Institute in Faber, Virginia, especially Robert Monroe for pursuing what is and not just what should be. Carol Sabic de la Heron and Karen Malik, who sought me out. Paul Rademacher and Skip Atwater, who welcomed me into that loving community in the ethereal high mountain meadows in central Virginia. Also to Kevin Cossey, Patty Avalon, Penny Holmes, Joe and Nancy Scooter McMonagall, Scott Taylor, Cindy Johnston, Amy Hardy, Loris Adams, and all of my fellow Gateway Voyagers at the Monroe Institute in February 2011, my facilitators, Charlene Nicely, Rob Sandstrom, and Andrea Berger, and fellow Lifeline participants and facilitators Francine King and Joe Gallenberger in July 2011. My good friends and critics, Jay Gainsborough, Judson Newbern, Dr. Alan Hamilton, and Kitch Carter, who read early versions of this manuscript and sensed my frustration in synthesizing my spiritual experience with neuroscience. Judson and Alan were critical in helping me appreciate the true power of my experience from the viewpoint of the scientist skeptic, and Jay the same from the standpoint of the scientist mystic. Fellow explorers of deep consciousness and the oneness, including Elke Siller McCartney and Jim McCartney. My fellow near-death experiencers, Andrea Kierowitz, for her excellent editorial advice, and Carolyn Tyler, for her soulful guidance in my understanding. Blitz and Heidi James, Susan Carrington, Mary Horner, Mimi Sykes, and Nancy Clark, whose courage and faith in the face of unfathomable loss helped me to appreciate my gift. Janet Sussman, Martha Harbison, Shoban or Rick, and Dana Falds, Sandra Glickman, and Sharif Abdullah, fellow travelers whom I first met on 11-11-11, gathered together to share our seven optimistic visions of a brilliant conscious future for all of humanity. Numerous additional people to thank include the many friends whose acts during that most difficult time and whose thoughtful comments and observations have helped my family and guided the telling of my story. Judy and Dickie Stowers, Susan Carrington, Jackie and Dr. Ron Hill, Drs. Mac McCrary and George Hurt, Joanna and Dr. Walter Beverly, Catherine and Wesley Robinson, Bill and Patty Wilson, DeWitt and Jeff Kierstead, Toby Beavers, Mike and Linda Milam, Heidi Baldwin, Mary Brockman, Karen and George Lupton, Norm and Paige Darden, Giselle and Kevin Nye, Joe and Betty Mullen, Buster and Lynn Walker, Susan Whitehead, Jeff Horsley, Clara Bell, Courtney and Johnny Alford, Gilson and Dodge Lincoln, Liz Smith, Sophie Cody, Luna Jensen, Suzanne and Steve Johnson, Kopi Haynes, Bob and Stephanie Sullivan, Diane and Todd Vye, Colby Prophet, The Taylor, Reams, Tatum, Hepner, Sullivan, and Moore families, and so many others. My gratitude, most especially to God, is unbounded.
Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife, with a New Introduction and Afterword, was written and read by Eben Alexander, M.D. It was recorded by Erica Weintraub at Simon & Schuster Audio in New York, with editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. Original music by Alexandra Tanous and Kevin Cossey. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. Proof of Heaven was produced and directed by Christina Zarafanidis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife, is available in hardcover from Simon & Schuster.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.